It's apparently the second biggest drug bust ever to have been made in South Africa. Police took 973 blocks of compressed cocaine out of three compartments of a fishing vessel in the port of Saldanha Bay. And the value of that, I'm not quite sure how these calculations are made, but those 973 blocks of compressed cocaine apparently translate to a street value of 583 million rand. That is a lot of cocaine. There were 10 foreign nationals arrested on Monday evening, charged with dealing in drugs, 4 Bulgarians and 6 from Myanmar. Apparently, there was some advance notification that this might happen because police had been monitoring the harbour for a while and obviously got some information that this was potentially a ship carrying drugs. They raided and they found a lot of drugs. Policing specialist Eldred de Klerk is on the line to us now from Cape Town. Eldred, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, John. And you sure you're not the minister of all things nomenclature? What did you that big word you used?
Nomenclature.
There you go.
Geographical nomenclature. There we go. That's actually the name of my folk band, it's called. We're performing at the Elmer Cafe on Saturday night, the Geographical Nomenclatures.
There you go.
Eldred, it is a lot of cocaine. This is the second biggest amount ever seized. Can I kind of assume that perhaps consignments of drugs as big, if not bigger than this, have come into the country and haven't been seized?
Yes, you can. John, this whole thing is doing my head in. I've been talking to a number of different sources and people up on this, people who have been watching this, and a number of questions have come to light. Where has this boat been? How long has it been out in the water? And apparently it's been out there for about a month, going from different ports. There's a number of ports that apparently is worth watching, and that's Nizhny, Mossel Bay, Hans Bay, and Saldanha Bay being one of them, and a couple of other smaller ports in between. And you're right, it's interesting that there's been a number of Bulgarians caught in this, because the people who's apparently running the market is Serbian. And often, you know, Serbia, Bulgaria, we just kind of conflate them in the same pot, so to speak. We just say they're from the similar region. So even though a lot of this is pointing fingers at the 28th gang, what we do know is that there's a new breed of people who doesn't necessarily, they may be associated with the prison gangs for their market, but they are people who can use the tools of the fourth industrial industrial revolution to pay in cryptocurrency, for example. So there may be no money going around, who can track invoices and who can track shipments and who can do a whole host of things that is in the background to enable this kind of haul to come in. And everybody who I'm speaking to is telling me very clearly that this smells like, looks like, and it probably is a decoy to give the authorities a win when there's a whole host of other stuff happening.
That's quite a statement to put forward, Eldred. That here, have half a billion rands worth of cocaine, because we know it means you're taking your eyes off somewhere else where we're importing a billion and a half rands worth of cocaine, kind of thing.
Well, John, we've been running these scenarios, and people like the Global Initiative and Transorganized Crime and a whole host of other people have been watching both gun and drug shipments all the way from Mogadishu, Mombasa, Tanzania, Richards Bay, Port Elizabeth, into Hermanus, Houston, and now into Saldanha and other smaller ports, but it's actually headed towards West Africa. So there's been a lot of attention on the Hermanus, Houston side of things, and on the southeastern corridor. But we know that parts of the drugs have come overland via Worcester onto the N1 and now onto the West Coast. And there's been a movement from the 28 gangs onto the West Coast, both acquiring grounds, property, and then now buying up shipping licenses and at least the opportunity to use people's boats for the last 4, maybe 5 years, definitely more than 3 years. And this movement has been there. In fact, if you go to the West Coast, people will talk about Dick Tarpanards, you know, coming in and having fancy cars, flashing lots of cash, and buying up things. So Dick Tarpanards has been making their way to the West Coast, both for the opportunities of exploiting the reinvestment in the area through the Saldanha Bay investment project and the steel project that's going on there, but also the infrastructure development and also the opportunity to be able to run what they want to do and access markets going up the coast, because there's been lots of attention for them on the southwest coast.
Okay. How much of this cocaine and other hauls of equal and bigger size are sold here in South Africa? Do we have that much of a habit, or is it moved on elsewhere?
Well, it's probably moved on elsewhere because, like somebody said to me, that this is somebody with a gold and platinum card can have that habit, not somebody with a SASSA card. They get sold took in very crude forms of the residue, of the leftover residue that come from synthetic drugs. So it is a particular niche market, and is a market that's catered for the middle to upper class and people with the liquid cash who can pay huge quantities for small amounts of milligrams of this particular substance.
Yes, 15, 20 years ago, I had a lot of acquaintances who used cocaine, some of them quite regularly, some of them socially once or twice a month, or maybe once or twice a quarter. I don't know anybody anymore who uses cocaine, but maybe that's because I've become even more of an old fart now than I was then. I'm serious. I mean, I used to know a lot of people, and now I don't. I know a lot of people who smoked dope, but that's about as far as the drug use. But maybe that's because I'm in my mid-60s, and maybe the cocaine-using population is younger.
Well, yeah, they've shifted, definitely younger. You know, it's the same kind of people who can go into a club and buy a bottle of premier whiskey, for example, at premier prices, who can buy who can invest in digital currency and like, because a lot of trading and a lot of market has shifted onto the digital platform and is now not being run by your warlords and gang lords of old, who most of them couldn't read or write. And we forget that. They may have had a lot of money. They may have had the acumen and the business sense of making huge sums of money from the illicit economy. What has happened now is that a generation has come in, and if they can read and write, and as somebody said to me, they understand the wisdom of being able to write and the wisdom of the pen and the wisdom of using technology to be able to penetrate the market, to even sell their wares. You know, you can somebody can bring you a digital point of sale device. There's a handover, you tap your card, and that person walks up with the point of sale device in their pocket. The cops may stop you, but there's been no money exchange. On the surface of it, it looks like no money's been exchanged.
And this is a battle which, I mean, to say the battle is being lost is a massive understatement. It's a battle in which essentially there's only one army in the field, and that's of the drug merchants, the drug traffickers.
Well, we do need a new generation of cops. That's the first thing. And secondly, we need to understand how this field works. It's often compartmentalized. So those 10 individuals, it's going to be interesting to watch what goes forward, because even if they do talk, how much do they really know? You in your supply line or the chain that actually feeds the system understand only your function, and you may know the functions on either side of you, but that's as much as you know. So there's a clear compartmentalization of knowledge, of effort. So when you do get caught, there's not much you can say other than people can trace, like in this case, how did you get into the country, what you're doing in the country, and hopefully start getting to know and map and plot what's around you. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that we know that criminal enterprises are a lot more agile, flexible, and adaptable, and they learn than any of our state institutions who have policy, who at least use the excuse, I would say, and I'm going to be really hard about this, of policy and rules. I mean, even people say the Constitution is tying our hands. Well, you know, I argue differently. I just think that you've got to still play within color, within the line, so to speak, and yet at the same time be flexible enough to learn how the market is changing and be responsive enough. And what we've seen, as we've seen both our intelligence community and our police not being as responsive as they ought to be.
Eldred Clark, policing specialist, thank you very, very much for talking to us.